Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. My guest is Emily Hawley, Senior Policy Associate with ACLU Oregon, who co-authored a report titled Solutions for Safe and Just Communities. The report says that Oregonians are demanding access to drug treatment and housing as the solution to the epidemic of drug addiction, that we cannot arrest our way out of homelessness, drug use, or poverty, and the report urges lawmakers to oppose any efforts to roll back Oregon's Measure 110. So welcome, Emily.
Hi, Karen. Thank you so much for having me today.
So, Emily, let's start with, what is Oregon's ballot measure 110?
So in fall of 2020, Oregon voters overwhelmingly passed ballot measure 110, which decriminalized user-level possession of illegal drugs and also allocated a significant portion of Oregon's cannabis revenue and also our savings and money we saved not prosecuting people for these low-level drug offenses into our addiction and treatment service system. And at the time, I just want to add this, at the time, Oregon was, by some studies, last in the country in providing these services. So we really needed this investment. And so that was what Measure 110 did. It refocused and treated addiction as a health issue. It acknowledged that what we all know, that addiction is a health issue, not a criminal issue, and completely overhauled Oregon policy to address it as such.
And now, fast forward 3 years later, after Oregonians overwhelmingly, as you say, voted in ballot measure 110, after it has been implemented and in effect for almost 3 years, what's happened?
Well, a lot has happened. And I do want to keep in mind that Oregonians passed measure 110 in the midst of the COVID pandemic. And as our homelessness crisis was worsening significantly, and as it was particularly spiraling into a serious crisis of people being unsheltered in our streets. And so at the same time, the supply chain disruptions that we had in many supply areas also occurred within the drug market. And so at that time, actually fentanyl supplanted heroin in Oregon's drug markets. And so we witnessed the rise of a fentanyl epidemic in Oregon in parallel with the rise of fentanyl in other Western states, particularly Washington and Nevada. And so while Measure 110 has saved millions of dollars in prosecuting low-level drug offenses and made huge inroads in providing services, help for people struggling with addiction across the continuum of care, at the same time, many Oregonians have been witnessing our community members struggling with addiction much more openly than they had in the past. We're seeing a lot more of it. And to be clear, this is not related to Measure 110. This is related to our housing crisis and a fentanyl epidemic. And there is overwhelming data that supports this. But right now, what we've seen is that a lot of people are really upset with what they're seeing in our streets. And they're upset with our lawmakers, they're upset with our policymakers. And there are really well-funded forces that are actively pushing to revert back into what is really the war on drugs and to revert back to criminalizing possession or criminalizing public use. And we also know that there are forces that profit from the prison industrial complex. So we are seeing these really well-funded efforts to kind of revert to this past failed war on drugs system and perhaps exploiting the humanitarian crisis in our streets and the desperation of many Oregonians to see change, to see real solutions, to see fixes for the suffering that we're all seeing. And that is really painful to see or to be experiencing. I think that's where we're at right now.
Emily, could you talk about how Measure 110 actually works? Now, people say that there's no incentive for people to get help.
So with Measure 110, we were looking to completely reinvent a system that before that had exclusively relied on law enforcement. A law enforcement that has, for many of our community members, caused a lot of harm. And so one of the priorities of Measure 110 is to meet people where they're at and support providers and connecting directly with people struggling with addiction. That means that can look like outreach workers, people who are really specialized, often have lived experience of addiction, of living unsheltered. And these are the folks that have been trained and hired and are going out amidst our communities and doing outreach and connecting with people and building the relationships that are so essential for our community members who are really, really suffering to feel like they're cared for and maybe start making the inroads that need to be made to seek out treatment and the help that they need. So I think there's been a lot of focus on how many citations are issued or how many people are using this hotline. Measure 110 is so much more than that. And also, crucially, Measure 110 has been expanding services and expanding treatment. And yet, we still do not have nearly enough the supply that we need for this crisis. And so when you speak to treatment providers, they have lines out the door. They have people who are coming and lining up and repeatedly trying to get the treatment they need. Or maybe they come that one time and it's the one day they feel ready to come. And then the next day, they're no longer up for it, or something's happened and they're not in that mental place anymore. We really have this deep need to continue to support and expand these services, whether it's outreach workers, treatment beds, detox options, just support it across that continuum.
And Emily, as you said, Oregon has been last in the nation for drug treatment services. Treatment has never been available on demand for people who want it when they want it. That has been a continuing issue. So it's going to take time. So why did you feel you wanted to debunk or set the record straight about all the misinformation out there at this time?
So the dialogue right now has been really frustrating. To be honest, it feels like we have some collective amnesia about the war on drugs. And we know when you talk to Oregonians, people know that the war on drugs failed. People recognize that the carceral system is not the appropriate response to this, that for someone to successfully go through the incredibly difficult process of seeking treatment and working towards recovery when they're struggling with addiction, especially with addiction with something like fentanyl, people know that someone has to be personally committed to that and want to do it. And so yet at the time, we've been seeing a lot of forces pushing for a return of what really is the war on drugs. And it might be a war on drugs that's described more gently or worded in a more thoughtful way, but would have the same impact of punishing our most vulnerable community members who are struggling with addiction. And it's something we know it doesn't work. We know that that is not an effective way to treat addiction. And we know it's harmful. And we know it's disproportionately harmful to our Black and Brown community members. And also, especially with some of the narratives that's going on right now, it's going to be disproportionately harmful to our homeless community, our homeless neighbors. We are honestly trying to bring reason back to the discussion and the evidence base that is very widely recognized and that Oregon voters did recognize in 2020 that shows that voluntary treatment is actually the appropriate response and that treating addiction as a health issue is the way forward. And of course, what we have now is nowhere near enough. And the enormous human suffering that we can see if we go out in our streets is evidence that this is not nearly enough. But that's not evidence that we need to go back to the failed policies and failed harmful policies of these times before. It means that we need to do more of the evidence-based policies and humane policies that work. And so I think for us, that is deeply important. And Oregon also was the first state to do this. And this is consequential not only for these evidence-based policies to have the opportunity to succeed in Oregon, but it could set these efforts back across the country. So that is another thing we keep in mind. We're not just talking about vulnerable Oregonians here. This could have ripple effects nationally.
Let's talk about some of the myths and misinformation that you debunk in your report. The report just released Solutions for Safe and Just Communities. Some Oregonians are actually blaming Measure 110 for the problem they're seeing on the streets, not blaming, as you said, the lack of housing, the lack of treatment, the lack of services for people.
So first of all, I think specificity is important when we're talking about what we are seeing. And so if you actually look at particularly property and violent crime data, according to at least FBI data from 2021 and 2022, it was actually on the decline in Oregon. A lot of what people are actually speaking about when they're talking about crime and disorder is witnessing people struggling with mental health and struggling or in the throes of addiction in our streets. It is really important to keep those separate. And I think it seems like there's been a loss of empathy for a lot of our neighbors who are struggling right now. So we know, first of all, that Measure 110 cannot be linked to a market increase in crime because there's not that increase in crime. So that is factually inaccurate. There have been medical studies that have shown that Measure 110 is not linked to any increase in overdoses in Oregon. And one way you can distinguish that is by looking at our comparable Western states. So May 2022 to May 2023, the CDC had shown that Oregon had a predicted increase in overdose deaths of about 22%. And this is comparable to Nevada, which would have an increase of 24%. Meanwhile, Washington was expected to have an increase by 37% of overdose deaths. And so while these states are similarly situated in terms of the rise in fentanyl, Oregon is unique in our decriminalization and Measure 110. And yet of these states, we have comparable, but a little bit less predicted deaths than Nevada and significantly less than Washington. This is not to say that these numbers aren't really serious and really concerning, and we absolutely need to be doing more.
And Emily, your report also addresses housing as an issue with the addiction we're seeing in our state.
Yes. The crisis that Oregonians are worried about is deeply intertwined with our housing crisis. And over the past 6 years, Oregon's homelessness has surged 63%. And right now, we don't even have a third of just the shelter beds we need for our population of Oregonians that are homeless. This is a really dire situation. Stated concerns about Measure 110 are almost certainly really the results of housing crisis. And we know that when our neighbors who are unsheltered are living outside, that it can either trigger or exacerbate mental illness. We also know that folks that are living in the streets may feel the need to self-medicate, take drugs that can help them stay awake at night. And we know that the COVID epidemic worsened our unsheltered crisis, and that we know being unsheltered makes people more vulnerable. Over the last 6 years, Oregon has had a 63% increase in our unsheltered homeless population. And currently, we have only 5,200 year-round shelter beds for 18,000 unhoused people, which is just a staggering figure.
The public drug use is an issue with a lot of people who are opposed to ballot measure 110, and they are calling for increased penalties for drug dealing and public drug use. Talk about that.
Yeah, so first, let's break that down, just split it up, use and dealing. So in terms of public use, what we are seeing here, while I definitely understand that it is really hard to see our community members suffering in the streets, what we are seeing is absolutely just a reversion to these tried and failed methods of punishing people for struggling with addiction. With public use in particular, I think it's pretty transparently would only punish possession and use of, because it would effectively punish possession and use of drugs by our houseless community, a community that we know is extremely vulnerable and is suffering. So to see these failed policies targeted pretty much exclusively at this marginalized population, we find deeply concerning. it's very obviously not going to actually help the issue of these community members struggling with addiction. It is not addressing the root causes. The root causes are that these folks are unsheltered, they're unhoused, we have a housing crisis, and they need support and services. As a society, we are offered a choice in how we reckon with our community members who are struggling. To do something like banning public use is to punish people who are suffering, and because we are witnessing that suffering. And from our perspective, these communities are communities that need help. People who are struggling with addiction need help. Also, punishing people for addiction seems particularly punitive right now, while there are lines out the door for treatment centers and services. And so the thought of punishing someone for not receiving treatment when that treatment is, we don't have adequate treatment, we don't have adequate supply, just seems particularly cruel right now. So of course, right now, actually, Oregon law enforcement has the authority to prosecute delivery dealing offenses. Dealing drugs, dealing illegal drugs, remains illegal. Law enforcement has that power. And if law enforcement is not prosecuting these crimes currently, that is not for lack of legal capacity. What we are seeing right now is some efforts. This might be getting too technical, but as policy associate and also a lawyer, I will dive into this little technicality a little bit. So for 30 years, Oregon law enforcement and prosecutors relied on this appellate court interpretation of Oregon's delivery law that allowed prosecutors to charge possession of a large amount of drugs with some indication that someone might sell the drugs as a completed delivery offense. This is a very unusual interpretation of the law. In pretty much every criminal law, an attempt is different from a completed offense. And Oregon has an attempt statute. So we have the option for attempted delivery. And so basically, it just gave a very, very low threshold for prosecutors to charge people of a delivery offense, which has enormous consequences. It's an aggravated felony if you look at it compared to federal statutes, which means it has significant immigration consequences. And it was very easy. it meant it was pretty easy to charge these delivery offenses. And so in 2021, I believe, an Oregon appellate court re-examined this and was like, there's no basis for what this boy delivery, as it was termed, for this interpretation. And this actually kind of runs afoul of the logic of our criminal legal system. And so right now we are seeing, and Oregon Supreme Court affirmed this year. So right now we're seeing a lot of pressure from our Oregon prosecutors who claim that this interpretation is essential for being able to charge and prosecute drug dealers. And even under the current law, they still have a very wide, I would say a pretty expansive amount of activity that still qualifies as a delivery offense. And so we have a lot of concerns about this logic, especially because the boy delivery's interpretation had significant disparities in terms of racial impacts of who was arrested and charged and convicted. And also because the low threshold of boy deliveries meant it was easy to sweep up people who are involved in what is considered addiction-motivated dealing versus profit-motivated dealing. And so as a society that is trying to treat addiction as a health issue and wants to view it as such and knows that addiction is a health issue, we'd be very concerned that this would again sweep up those who are involved in what we consider to be addiction motivated dealing and folks who are supporting their addiction by generally dealing small amounts to support their own addiction or self-medication as compared to what we consider to be the really large scale dealers that you would think would be law enforcement's priority. And one other thing to think about when we have these lines of people who are voluntarily trying to seek addiction treatment, but cannot get it because there's not yet enough treatment. it is particularly illogical to then be coercing others to the front of those lines who potentially are not ready or aren't yet there. And so this is why we desperately need to expand treatment, because right now it's inadequate. It is not a rational solution to be coercing treatment for those who are not yet ready for it.
When we talk about treatment, also, Emily, people, I think, don't understand that Black and brown people are disproportionately targeted for addiction and crimes, and how culturally specific treatment services are just pretty non-existent in this state. Can you address that?
Thank you so much for bringing that up. And that reminds me of something I wanted to mention, which is the way Measure 110 prioritizes culturally specific care for different impacted communities, and particularly for communities that have been long harmed by the war on drugs. And that was new and is really valuable. Today, right now, Oregon has the fifth worst arrest disparities in the nation in terms of race. I can say that again. Today, Oregon has the fifth worst arrest disparities in terms of race in the nation. And we know that these racial disparities played out significantly in the war on drugs around the country, and particularly in Oregon. When Measure 110 was passed, Black Oregonians had double the rate of convictions for possession of methamphetamine, heroin, and cocaine statewide. Double the rate. And so simply in stopping prosecution of these low-level offenses, we made steps towards simply an ending prosecution of these low-level offenses and these offenses for a health issue. We have made progress in redressing these really long-standing deep racial disparities. And yet, right now, Oregon still has so far to go. And so to entertain the idea of reverting back to the way it was before, or to banning public use, when we know that our systems remain deeply systemically racist, is in fact making policy that would knowingly and disproportionately harm communities of color in Oregon.
So your report, Emily, says Oregonians want real solutions. Talk about some of those real solutions in your report.
So when we're talking about solutions, we are talking about ways forward that center addiction as a health issue, and that treat it as such, and that treat people who are struggling with addiction as people in need of help, not in need of sticks or punishment. And so we need recovery housing. We need to expand affordable housing and take measurable efforts to reduce poverty and inequality in our society. On the more immediate side, of course, we need safe and accessible shelters. We need temporary housing options to help homeless people into that short-term housing. There are things like for folks who really, their focus is their community, livability. We can create community work programs for trash cleanup, neighborhood revitalization efforts. These can be jobs programs, so it can really support people at various stages in their community. And essentially, supporting efforts like CAHOOTS, like Portland Street Response, police alternatives that can respond to these crises of mental health or addiction as health crises, and work to expand this workforce, train people, and really meet people where they're at in a way that treats them as people who are suffering and not people who are in for some reason deserving of punishment.
So our legislature will meet in 2024. It is a short session here in Oregon in 2024, but they will be focusing on addiction. What are your thoughts?
Oregon lawmakers, state lawmakers have made it very clear that addiction and public safety are their number one priority for the legislative session. And this is partly because it's something Oregonians really care about, but it's also partially because of an effort actually led by the former head of Department of Corrections and a former Republican lawmaker named Max Williams, who has a very well-funded effort and has filed, I guess now, four ballot initiatives, but two, and then kind of a replacement two ballot initiatives that would criminalize public use, recriminalize possession, and expand ballot initiatives that would criminalize public use and or recriminalize possession, as well as expanding coerced treatment. And so Max Williams has stated that these ballot initiatives, he does not actually want to have a big ballot measure fight next year, but that this is an incentive for lawmakers to take action on the issues of addiction public safety, with that very clear insinuation that this group expects that lawmakers take steps to criminalize possession and or criminalize public use and to expand coerced treatment. So lawmakers are under a very heavy pressure right now to take these really regressive actions. And so Oregon lawmakers formed a joint committee of their Senate and House to study and establish policy to move forward on Measure 110. But to be honest, a lot of the discussion has been pretty centered on recriminalization, and particularly on around criminalizing public use, criminalizing possession, and then lowering the threshold for what is a delivery offense. So I think a lot of advocates who prioritize treating addiction as a health issue, following evidence-based policy and humane approaches to this issue, are in a very defensive position right now and trying to figure out how to push back against these efforts to minimize harms if policies continue forward that are harmful and punitive. But it is a very difficult political context right now. And so that is one reason I'm so grateful to be speaking with you today, so that our audience can understand these stakes and that there are really powerful forces moving forward and pressuring for us to really reverse the progress that we've made, rather than continuing to expand this deeply, deeply needed programming and support. And so that will be one of the ACLU of Oregon's top priorities, is going to be working to maximize civil liberties, maximize treating addiction as a public health issue, and working to expand these needed services and housing and really treat the root issues, and hoping that we can fend off these false and harmful policies.
So a few websites people can go to: oregonlegislature.gov to sign up for these hearings that will be upcoming and testify in favor of Measure 110. And also, Emily, where could they find your report?
Yes. So I think just look up ACLU of Oregon Solutions for Safe and Just Communities, and you should find it.
Emily Holly with ACLU Oregon, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's been a pleasure.
I've been speaking with Emily Holly, Senior Policy Associate with ACLU Oregon, and thank you for listening.